Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind. I'm Brian McKellen. Want to learn how the characters of your favorite TV shows catch the suspects, fall in love, and face the challenges of everyday life? Well, look no further than to the wonderful world of audio description. According to the American Council of the Blind, audio description attempts to describe the images of theater, television, movies, and other art forms for the blind and visually impaired. As of July 2012, the Federal Communications Commission requires broadcasters to provide up to 4 hours per week of audio-described television programming. To talk more about the new rules and what they mean for you is Joel Snyder. Joel is the president of Audio Description Associates and the director of the American Council of the Blind's very own audio description project, and he is also one of the first audio describers. Hi, Joel.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. I'm doing very well. I'm doing very well. I'm pleased to be your guest today.
Fabulous. So before we get into the FCC rules, why don't you give our listeners a brief history of audio description and how it got its start on television?
Sure. Yeah, indeed. I thought perhaps I would focus on television. Audio description in general has probably been around since prehistoric times, Brian. I think it's as old as anyone, sighted or not, telling someone else about something they can't see, either because they're blind or have low vision or they're looking the wrong way or in another room or what have you. But it was written about in the 70s, I think, for the first time formally in California by my good friend and colleague, Gregory Fraser, who unfortunately died about 15 years ago. And that actually was actually had a focus on television and film. It was a master's thesis on the autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman, and he did it under the supervision of August Coppola out there at San Francisco State, who's the brother, I believe, of Francis Ford Coppola. But it was just a couple years later when audio description as a formal ongoing service and some basic fundamentals were developed in the Washington, D.C. area by the Washington Ear, and I was fortunate to be part of that group in 1981. And a few years later, the Ear began experimenting with developing description for televised broadcasts. At first, they tried to do it by recording description and playing it as a separate audio track on FM radio, so it would try to simul-sync with a television audio track being played on your television. That didn't work so well because there are all kinds of issues with timing and broadcast delay and lag time and such. But in about 1985 or 86, WGBH, they approached the Ear because they were interested in trying to do it in a more formal, technically accurate way by recording an alternative soundtrack that could accompany description, be turned on and off using the secondary audio program feature that was part of analog television back in those days. So GBH came to Washington, and we did their pilot for them. I remember writing and voicing several American Playhouse and Mystery programs for them back in, as I say, about 85 or 86. And that all went quite well. It took a few years, and then in the late 80s, or perhaps it was early 90s, I should double-check that, WGBH launched their audio description service, which they, of course, call Descriptive Video Service, and people refer to it as DVS. That's their particular brand name. Now, description is much more widely available than simply on public television, although it's still fairly minimal compared to what's available in Canada and the United Kingdom. But we're growing from there, and indeed the legislation that took effect July 1st is a part of that expansion.
Before we get into that legislation, though, let's go into a little behind the scenes of audio description. Listeners are wondering just how does this audio description work? So how is audio description created?
A very good question, and I'm sure a lot of people think about that and wonder about that. The audio description, first and foremost, I think, is a literary art form in that it uses words. It's studied in Europe, as a matter of fact, as a kind of audiovisual translation. It is a translation from the visual image to the verbal. And so it begins with a trained describer, someone who has studied and familiarized themselves and practiced with some of the basic fundamentals of description training, and they write a script that, in performing arts, oftentimes it's done in a more extemporaneous way. But in any event, it's a matter of creating language, words that describe images that are most critical to an understanding and an appreciation of the visual image. And it all has to be done, especially, we're talking about media, television, or film, or performing arts, it all has to be done in those pauses between bits and pieces of dialogue, or being careful not to interfere with critical sound elements. It's not just dialogue. It's all the sound effects and music effects that are in a program. So we have to weave the description around those elements. It's then voiced. Once we have a script and we feel comfortable with that and the timing seems to be correct, we have it voiced, generally for television and film, of course, in a professional studio of some sort that can lay the track down to an original soundtrack, ducking and raising audio levels so that when description is being voiced, you hear the description clearly and the original soundtrack is lowered or ducked, and vice versa, of course, when the original soundtrack needs to be front and center, if you will. And then that's laid back to that audio track. The audio track or the entire video with that mixed soundtrack is sent off to the broadcasters or the networks involved, and they send it out on their signal. Things are a little different now, and I imagine we'll be getting into that as far as digital transmission versus analog transmission for television. But that's a bit of a snapshot on how description is created.
Now let's go to talking about those rules. President Obama signed the famous Communications and Video Accessibility Act of 2010, and the FCC also adopted it. And it required for audio description to be broadcast on television a certain number of hours per week on the major networks, CBS, ABC, NBC, and same with children's programming. So
and the top five cable networks as well.
And what are those top five cable networks?
That's a good question, of course. There may be some confusion about that. We're talking about USA, Disney, TNT, TBS, and Nickelodeon.
Okay. And so why don't you give us an overview of that act and how it applies exactly, more specifically, to audio description on TV?
Absolutely. I should note that, a lot of audio description consumers and advocates and just people who think it's something that should be there have been working a long time on this, and that work resulted about 10 years ago, a little bit more than 10 years ago, in the FCC establishing rules about audio description that are quite similar to what this legislation dictates. Unfortunately, as some of your listeners will know, that those rules, it wasn't a law, they were rules that the FCC established, that was challenged in court, and those rules were struck down by the court, basically because what the court found is that the FCC exceeded their authority from their legislative mandate in establishing those rules, that the FCC had only been authorized to study description, and actually authorizing description was going a little bit too far at that point. So it took us 10 years to then finally have legislation developed in Congress, which President Obama signed in 2010, that actually directed the FCC to go ahead and reestablish those rules. And there were some changes that the description legislation is part of that larger act, which actually in large part has to do with captioning and other accessibility measures. But description, of course, is the area that we're most concerned with. And the rules that were established by the FCC, according to the legislation, call for the top four, we call them terrestrial networks, the CBS, ABC, NBC, and Fox, plus those five cable networks, to provide 50 hours per quarter, and that comes out to about 4 hours a week, in the top 25 markets. So that's another little piece in there that people need to, unfortunately, it means that many parts of the country are not covered by the mandate. But 4 hours per week, in addition, of course, public broadcasting continues their broadcast of description for a number of programs that they've been doing all along. Some of the networks had begun description back in 2001 and 2002, and they continued with a few hours here and there, CBS most notably. Now, of course, as you pointed out, the 4 hours per week is actually mandated, required by law. Beyond that, there are not actually written in any specific rules for an increase in that amount of programming. It will be looked at over the next year or two, and hopefully Congress will come back and revise the rules. It either will be Congress or the FCC will be able to mandate, just as they did with captioning some 30 years ago, mandate or put in place rules that require an increase in those numbers, probably a gradual increase over years. 4 hours per week, we're glad we have it in the law. It's a big step, but it's minimal. And so we are certainly hopeful that folks will express their appreciation for the description that is there to the networks, to the FCC, and let them know that they want more, that people who are blind or have low vision have every right to have full access to everything that's on television, just as folks who are deaf now enjoy captioning for virtually 100% of programming in the United States.
What is expected in terms of the expansion of the laws in the coming years?
It is certainly in the minds of consumers and advocates and folks that were dealing with this legislation that there should be a graduated schedule, if you will, for increasing the number of hours. It worked extremely well with captioning over a couple of decades, and it got to the point where we're now at 100% of programs that are captioned. That's exactly, really, people who are blind should demand no less. So even though there isn't a schedule written into the law right now, we should definitely make sure that the FCC understands it's great that we have this so far, but we need access to everything that's on television.
And I am sure that there's going to be more of an expansion of audio-described programming for the younger viewers, like who watch the CW, Cartoon Network, Bravo, and even the Spanish-speaking viewers who watch Univision and Telemundo, correct?
You're absolutely right. One of the entities that produces description in the United States, I trained their describers some years ago, is a group called DICAPTA. It used to be called Closed Caption Latina, and they are the principal provider of description for Spanish-speaking programs, and they have a grant from the Department of Education to do just that. They focus on description for educational programs that the grant is to provide description for those programs. Indeed, I'm glad you brought that up, Brian, because the principal source until this legislation of description has been funding from the Department of Education. And that funding stopped for a couple of years in the late 2010s, and then just a couple of years ago, it was reinstated by the department for 5 years, a certain amount per year for 5 years to certain developers of description. And they use those grants. This is in addition to the programs that are mandated by law. The grants actually pay for the description for educational programs, and many of those programs are shows that are shown in schools. So that's over and above what's required by the law. And of course, many of the programs that the networks are describing, or having described, I should say, are probably would not be appropriate for Department of Education funding. They're not educational. They don't focus on kids or that kind of thing. But and there's a whole range of television programming out there that folks should have access to. But the educational money is a part of this. Ultimately, it will be a smaller and smaller part, is my prediction. It just becomes part of the law and part of what normal operations should be to make sure programming in television, but I talk a lot about performing arts settings and museums, it should just be part of any institution's typical normal programming that they're keeping in mind access to people who are blind or have low vision.
Now let's talk about the audio described programming that's currently on television.
Sure.
What are some of the most popular shows being described that are out there?
Well, it's just started, the mandate. So as far as numbers and popularity, I'm not sure there's anybody that can really track that correctly or adequately. We ought to look into that. I think that's a good point. I'll start with PBS because although they're not required to do description under the mandate, they've been doing it since the early 90s at least. And for 5 years, I remember I produced a description for Sesame Street, for instance, which was great fun. Certainly watched and enjoyed by many young people who are blind or have low vision. But in fact, I'll share with your listeners, I got a wonderful letter from a woman in her 40s who is blind and has a sighted daughter. She wrote to me because for the first time, she could follow along with her sighted daughter all the antics of the Sesame Street characters. She remembered listening to Sesame Street when she was a blind child, and that was great fun. And now she got a hint of, just what Oscar the Grouch looks like and Bert and Ernie and all those other people. But beyond educational programming and PBS, I would say I hear so much about people enjoying Law and Order on TNT. I think the CSI programs on CBS are quite popular. Maybe it has something to do with our fascination with the law and courtrooms and such, but Criminal Minds is described on CBS as well. I'm almost certain that Fox has had description for a while now on The Simpsons. I'm looking at a listing that I have here because I don't want to focus just on one organization or another, but I'm looking at Disney providing programming, or rather description for educational programs. Well, the Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, is that educational? I guess it is to some degree. The Ant Farm, A-N-T Farm, Jake and the Neverland Pirates, Little Einsteins, these are Disney programs. TBS has Tyler Perry's House of Pain, Tyler Perry's For Better or Worse. USA has The Common Law. There's those legal programs again. And beyond the mandate, another channel. Turner has been really quite wonderful in providing description for quite some time now on their TCM, Turner Classic Movies. So a lot of the older movies are described on TCM, and that's great. USA also has the NCIS program that has description. Or did I say CIS? CSI. I think that's correct. I'm getting my acronyms mixed up here. Fox has Family Guy described. Have I left anybody out entirely? I'm not sure. I don't seem to have a record handy right this minute of programs on NBC that are described, but I could probably get that to you. I'm looking through a list that I have. And in fact, the list that I'm looking at is nothing that's private or secret. In fact, we provide this on the Audio Description Project, ADP, the Audio Description Project's website, which is right there, part of ACB. Folks should just make note of that, the acb.org/ADP. And you just click under television, or it's talked about in some of our front page articles, and you can click on a link there to these TV listings.
And two other shows I also noticed, which I could tell our listeners, that are in audio description. I have a Comcast cable back at my house in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I was able to access Fox's MasterChef and Hell's Kitchen.
Yes, I see Health Kitchen. Yes, that's right.
And I was able to use the change the audio settings on the cable box to Spanish, and I was able to receive those audio descriptions.
Exactly.
And I'm a visually impaired person who sits close to see the TV, and sure. I notice at the bottom right of the screen, like with what CBS used to do for stereo and other stations like Fox back in the 80s, where they said,
right,
in stereo where available,
right.
They also have the famous 80 symbol come up
there
at the bottom
go.
Of the screen
That's
that just whooshes, wipes away, and then it just shows the Fox station's logo at the very bottom of the screen for
That's
those
right.
who have the HD TVs.
You're absolutely right. And I'm glad you mentioned that whole clicking on the cable setting for Spanish. And that may seem odd to some people, but it has some tradition or history to it. In analog days, folks would, on their remote control for their television, hit the SAP button. Sometimes it was called MTS, multi-channel television sound, but usually it was SAP, the SAP channel. And that, some people thought that stood for Spanish audio language or something like that, but it was, or audio programming, but it was actually the secondary audio program. And the reason that was created, initially many years ago was to transmit, simultaneous translation in Spanish or other languages, but it's thought of as the Spanish track or the SAP track, the Espanol track, and that's why, that's one sure way, if it's available on your cable remote control or the settings, as you say, that you found on your cable box, hit that, turn the Spanish on, if you will, and let it stay on. That will result in your hearing description, but it's important to remember that you're only going to get description when it's being offered for a particular program. If there's no description for that program, and of course that's going to be the vast majority of hours throughout the week, there will not be description. If you just turn on your television at any hour of the day on a particular network and expect description, you probably will be disappointed. But keep it on, and that's actually, then description will pop on when a program comes up that is described. That has caused some confusion with folks because, in fact, I was talking yesterday at length with an audio description consumer who would keep the SAP channel on, wanted to do that, but, or Espanol channel on, but when she did that, the audio went away entirely if there wasn't description. And that shouldn't happen. The cable network or satellite network should be passing through the standard audio on the regular audio stream as well as the Spanish audio stream. So we're working on that with her cable provider, trying to make sure she gets the audio on the SAP channel rather than simply silence.
What are some of the other ways that people can access the audio descriptions? Say they have an antenna. Say sure. They've got other cable companies with different kinds of cable boxes. Like mine's a Motorola. Right. The others are Scientific Atlanta. And also satellite services like DirecTV, Dish Network.
Absolutely. This is part of the this is probably the biggest issue that I deal with or hear about from consumers is I can't access the description on this program. I know it's being described. I can't seem to turn it on. And of course, there isn't a standardization throughout the boxes, throughout, and it's not just cable boxes, of course, as you note, it has to do with satellite providers, it has to do with folks who are simply getting the signal over the air and have a converter box converting the digital signal to analog so they can access it on an older analog television. It's kind of all over the map as far as how you access it, and it just simply depends on the service provider you have. My best recommendation, I of course don't know the ins and outs of every single cable box that's out there or every single remote control that's used by Dish or DirecTV. The best thing to do is be in touch with the consumer affairs people at the cable network, at the networks themselves or your local television station, at the satellite providers, Dish and Direct are the principal ones that I know of, and they should be helpful in getting the signal through to you. Sometimes they'll pass the buck and say, oh, well, the network isn't passing it through, but that's almost always not accurate. They have to receive the signal and pass it through. And of course, if there are difficulties, after you've tried accessing it through the local means and contacting the providers, you know, you can certainly send me an email at jsnyder@acb.org or give me a call on my phone line that we have set up for the audio description project. That's 202-467-5083. And I'll try to do everything I can to help. And, you know, if we keep running into problems, the other option that folks have is to, it's fairly easy to file an FCC complaint, a complaint to the FCC. Hey, this is a requirement. I'm not getting the description. I'm not getting help from my cable provider or satellite or whomever. Send a note to the FCC, and they have been very helpful as well. They'll respond pretty quickly. They have to, and they'll look into it as well and try to support you, and I will as well if you contact me.
Okay, Joel, this is great information.
Oh, good.
We are running out of time, though, but thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, Brian, thank you, and I know you're an expert describer yourself. We've done some description training together, and it's great to have your interest and be a part of your program.
And the description training we may talk about on another show.
That'd be fine.
But thank you so much, Joel.
Okay, Brian, great talking to you.
That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening, and remember to speak out.